Want to be a part of the podcast network that actually likes things? Well, now you can join the Front Row Network by supporting us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/frontrownetwork to unlock all of the dozens of special perks that come from being one of our patrons, including exclusive episodes, on-air shoutouts, Ask Me Anything sessions, and even the ability to guest star on an episode of your choosing. That's right. Go to patreon.com/frontrownetwork to unlock all these special features with tiers starting as low as $1 a month. What, are we nuts? Of course we are. You've heard our shows. $1 a month can get you so much bonus content that you will not know what to do with it. So go to, once again, to patreon.com/frontrownetwork to join up with us. And hey, we will see you in the front row.
The door that finally opens with life flooding in, spilling.
Hello, everybody out there in podcast land, and welcome to the final episode of Flashback Presents Raised by Wolves for Season 1. This spinoff series has been different from our normal episode structures. Whereas we normally break down the movies of our past and how they've influenced current pop culture and events, we flipped the script and we're taking a look at a new show that came out on HBO Max. It's been heavily influenced by many movies we have and will cover on Front Row Flashbacks. Today, we're going to break down episodes 9 and 10 of Raised by Wolves and talk about those pop culture influences this show proudly wears on its shoulder, and about the greater discussion of artificial intelligence and our reliance on technology. Along with me to close out our first season of Flashback Presents Raised by Wolves is my co-host and the mechanical machinery mistress of this operation, Aaron McCabe. What's going on?
Well, now that I'm done cutting you off with my headphones, now that you've taught me how to use them through error, I am sad to announce we are in the final episode and my refrigerator still does not work. Came out, repaired it. Same alarm came on. So I'm still here with two refrigerators in my house. Only one functioning, which isn't a bad problem, but how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I am very sorry.
You got a lot going on.
I do. I'm sorry for your middle-class white people problems. Too many refrigerators is...
too many. Well, only one of them works. Not like I've got two functioning refrigerators.
Is one stacked on the other? Because that's really the way to go.
No, one's just in my living room. It's just in my living room, hanging out, listening to the word when we're watching TV. Yeah, I know, but it does. It sounds super waspy when I say it, doesn't it?
Super. Oh, my fridge doesn't work. I guess I'll have to use my other fridge. Right. The garage fridge. Oh, how trashy.
That thing, though, that thing's a 20-year-old fridge, and it's a no-limit soldier. Mm-hmm. This 7-year-old LG, this is the one that can't hold its weight. So,
It's the father of fridges.
Yeah, Kenmore's, man, 20-year-old Kenmore. That thing's awesome.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry your new fridge didn't get fixed, or your old, whatever, the broken fridge.
Maybe by season 2. We'll see what happens in season 2 if my refrigerator gets fixed.
Yes. Yes. Well, are you excited or nervous or confused about our upcoming discussion?
I got a lot of feelings, a lot of mixed emotions and jumbled feelings about it. What about you?
I kind of like the direction it's headed.
Yeah?
Yeah, but it gets real weird.
It does get real weird.
Well, you want to run us through episode 9?
Episode 9 is called Umbilical, and it's one of my favorite episodes that we've had in this show. It's, you know, just real quick, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff to talk about, but basically Hunter digs into further into Father's programming as the Mithraic are growing increasingly concerned over Marcus's behavior. He's really going off the deep end. Hunter is kind of starting to, I guess, miss Father, like, you know, I don't know, have a conscience about him. And he ends up flipping a switch in him and reverting him back to his background programming. or his old programming. And Mother is searching for a safe place. Now, remember, we found out in episode 8, she's carrying some life form. She's carrying some child. You know, we think it's maybe, we don't know, is it human? Is it android? Is it a hybrid? No one knows at this point, but she's searching for a safe place in order to have the baby. And she's also having these, she's having urges, you know, I don't know, cravings for both her own fuel blood from android, but also plasma for like what, you know, blood comes out of human blood. She ends up meeting up with the children and Sue. And her and Sue have a confrontation. One of a really cool and powerful scene, I feel like, in this show. And, you know, the kids are reunited with Mother. And also Tempest confronts her demons. We'll get into that. And Marcus ends up being left alone. He gets into a fight with the remaining Mithraic soldiers. There's some animosity and a battle that ensues there. And then he's kind of off on his own trying to find Paul and everybody else. So it's all in a disarray in Umbilical. So let's get into that episode. What were your thoughts? What were your initial thoughts about episode 9?
This is a good one. I like this one a lot. A few things happen. Hunter fixing Father, you know, reverting him back to Father, but not just doing it, but like hugging him and being really excited and calling him Pops.
It was so sweet.
It was interesting, right? Because like he's the reason he got wiped. And then we thought he was excited in a previous episode when he thought Father had reverted back. But then you were kind of like, maybe he was excited, maybe not. But he was super excited. He hugged him and everything and was very happy, which is interesting because Hunter's the devout, you know, Mithraic. But even he can see that not just Marcus going crazy, but also just creating chaos amongst the adults, which is an interesting dynamic. That was involved. And, so him being the one to get excited, I think was interesting and powerful. I think it shows too that the kids all generally feel Mother and Father are quite frankly, the better parental, figures, the better leaders to follow. And I think that was, that was cool. And it was, I like how the last episode when he was doing the little finger tappy Morse code thing, you know, it was, what was it? Sol is the light or?
Sol is light. Yeah.
Sol is light. You know, just like, oh, it's just some generic Mithraic motto. But the reality was that was a passcode to a built-in safeguard that Father had to retain his father programming. So I thought that was cool too, that, you know, he had a built-in safeguard in case somebody tried to stop them from accomplishing their mission. And I thought that was cool.
I agree. And I loved that Hunter, it was like a redemption moment for him. Cause really the first 8 episodes, you're like, this kid's a jerk. Like he's got no sense of loyalty. He can't see past, you know, the tip of his nose. Like, he was really just kind of leaning on his own privilege, you know, within the Mithraic. And I guess, I don't know if it's like what you call it, real world experience on Kepler 22b and out there dealing and kind of seeing like as far as community and like survival goes and like having these two androids as parental figures and how then the other children he's with view them, revere, you know, grow relationships with them. It was nice to see. And it was really sweet. And I can't remember, I know this happens later now, later in the episode when Father meets up with Campion, but I think it happened with Hunter too, where it was kind of like, how do I know it's you? And Father starts with some of his jokes.
Yeah.
Father's got the dad jokes all the time. So I loved that. It's such an endearing part of him.
Yeah.
And all dads. You got the dad jokes too.
Got the dad jokes. Yeah. Yeah. It was nice. Because right away the kids know. Yes. Well, and there we'll get to it. I kind of take my notes in chronological order, but father feels protective of all the kids now.
Yeah.
And Hunter included. Like father, when he came to and Hunter was happy to see him, father was in turn happy to see Hunter and thanked him for helping him and was very happy. And that comes back later, but I want to call out something you got right. Cause we said, how did mother get pregnant? You know?
Yeah.
Said, it was a virtual nookie. And sure enough, that's what mother said. She said it was the virtual copulation, that made her pregnant. So just want to give you props on calling.
Well, thank you. It's like, oh my gosh, do you remember, this is going to be inappropriate, but like, do you remember in the night, like AOL or like when people would be like cyber sex? Like, I'm like, I was trying to explain this episode to my husband and I was like, so the Android had cyber sex, like legit with the program. I'm like, and now there's a baby.
Yeah. They had unprotected sexting going on.
I called something else in my head, but I didn't say it out loud. And we'll get to that later on. I'll fill you in on what that was. But yes. Okay. So back to the unprotected virtual copulation, as you referred to it.
She's explaining, you know, because everybody's asking her like, you're a robot and you're pregnant. And how does that work? Cause you know, it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And then it gets even weirder, but then mother is with Tempest and they're looking for the safe area. And that's where Sue, who at the end of the last episode had kind of teamed up with most of the kids, except for Hunter, and they were all running away from the Mithraic. Well, and now the two groups meet and Sue immediately draws a weapon to go after mother, and all the kids, including Paul, stand in front of mother to protect her, to stop Sue from killing her, which, you know, Sue's kind of mad, kind of confused, like, what the hell are you guys doing?
Right.
But I thought that was a really cool moment. I've got several movies popped into my brain. I mean, it's a bit of a cliched thing, I think, but it called to mind. I had three different movies I wrote down.
What one?
Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. It's a weird turn, and he's in a tribe of kids. there's some of that. Hook. When the kids start to believe that old man Peter Pan is Peter Pan. And obviously the kids from the Goondocks protecting Sloth from the police.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Totally. It was a really powerful moment. I definitely got very teary. Because it was also like, there were so many episodes where you didn't really know, like, yeah, like they definitely, like, you knew they were going to do that for father. There was never a doubt, but like there were a lot of times and even I would say like, yeah, they liked mother and they didn't want anyone to hurt him, but like to protect her like that was like, whoa, okay. And kind of one of those things where, you know, there were a lot of iffy things mother did, you know, there were a lot of times she questioned her own abilities, her own programming as a mother and like, was she doing it? And it was kind of one of those moments where, yeah, okay, like overall you are doing a good job of being a mother because all of these kids felt so strongly for you, even the ones that weren't yours, to protect you. So that was very validating with their lives, very validating as a mother to be like, holy crap, I'm doing this right. You know,
I also think it's nice that they don't make the kids just like idiots. Like, I think the kids were like, oh, you're a pregnant robot. You've been dealing with some shit. I think I kind of get some of the weird stuff a little bit more now. You know, like, kids aren't dumb.
Yeah.
You know, and they know she's, even though they know she's an android, they've seen her have emotions. So I think they're like, yeah, this is weird. No wonder her circuits are going bananas and she's been a little weird. That's kind of what I thought too, is they got some of the questionable thing she had done, and that's why they're like, oh yeah, we gotta protect her because it's a pregnant robot, like, gotta protect
well that. And so I think what's so interesting about this series, and you know, we can get into it whenever, but it's like, you know, there's a lot of talk in this whole thing about programming, right? And so one of their programmings was all about like the expendability, like at least in the Mithraic, the expendability of androids. And how like not human they are. And so, you know, maybe a part of their own programming was undone by sheer lived in experience of actually being taken care of and protected by androids.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's nice. Let's talk about Marcus.
This guy is losing it. Like,
yeah.
I mean, he's just crumbling.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you can only hear some really convincing voices in your head for so long before you start to go nuts. But they go back to the fifth element rock.
Yep.
As we've been calling it. And Marcus is going to shove Hunter's arm in there and burn it off.
My God.
And that's the thing I was mentioning with Father, because Father's like, is this an opportune time to protect him, or is it just going to get us both killed? Or and luckily, for some reason, Hunter does not get burned in the rock like Ambrose did when Marcus shoved his face into the rock. So we don't know exactly why, rhyme, reason, we don't know. But then as soon as, you know, he didn't hurt him, him and Hunter kind of were like, okay, they had a moment. They kind of figured it out that they were going to escape together when the time was right. And they successfully did. So I thought that
was a very stressful moment.
It was a good bonding moment for those two characters. And just because Hunter was that one kid, you know, because some of the other kids are still very into the religion, but also into mother and father as parental units.
Right.
He was into the religion and not into the android thing. He was like full on into the cult of the Mithraic. You know, androids are
very bought into the programming.
So it's also nice to see, right? We're not just seeing the robots fight their programming. We're seeing the humans evolve, right? Because you have Marcus evolving his thoughts. I would say Sue is the one who's really not evolving kind of beyond, but I think mother being pregnant is starting to get that reaction out of her, that change to go against our programming, to think outside of what we normally would think of. So I thought those moments with Father and Hunter were really cool.
Yeah, they were really awesome. And I had, until you just said that, maybe I blocked it out of my head. I'd forgotten about that. It was very stressful. Like, the gentleman who plays Father does such an amazing job in this whole series. His emotions and his emotional responses, even as he's playing an android, are like really palpable. So like he, with his whole body, everything, he's a fantastic actor. Like, could really see like him holding himself back and being like, crap, I've got to hold my, you know, my fake programming so that I don't get us both killed. And it was like, you could really feel the stress off of it. So yeah, I agree. I loved that. And then they run off. the kids are protecting mother from Stu, but we kind of forgot an important after they escape. In the meantime, we kind of forgot that in the meantime, mother forgot to mention that mother had found, is his name Otho?
Ortho? Oh, yes. Otho. Yes. Otho.
They found the rapist. They found him. She found him. He's wandering around. And she needs, you know, either fuel, blood, or plasma. So now she's basically hooked up a like blood tubing to him in order and into her in order to feed her fetus. So when the kids and Sue find her mother, she's hooked up to this guy and they're like, what are you doing? And she's like, I don't, you know, he still has the android, the like fail safe android with him that if that android's body, head, whatever gets too far away or outside of 10 feet, he's got the thing on his head that'll crush it. But she's like, ah, it's fine. I'm just using him. I'm using his blood. Like it's all good. And they're all obviously still like, they're kind of like traumatized by the scene. And also you've got Tempest who's now being confronted with this man, her perpetrator.
Yeah. And also there's some more Mad Max, but this time Fury Road.
Yeah.
Where the war boys hook up to Max and take his
totally
blood.
Oh my god,
I didn't even catch that until you started saying it. Oh man, this is Mad Max heavy on this one.
Yeah.
Oh, even great. The thing he's wearing, even that thing he's wearing is very Mad Max like from the
you're
series.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, which is cool. but then like you said, this other thing happens where somehow the flow of the blood gets reversed.
Yeah. Is that when she's looking at the tarot cards?
I think it was. Yeah. She found these weird random metal tarot cards. Nobody brought them. They were just there and they're giving her
visions.
And then
visions of weird stuff, maybe ghosts.
Yeah. Oh man. I got to go back to something in a second involving Hunter just made me think with the visions, right? Lots of snake things, happening throughout. That was part of Hunter's arm thing, Marcus saw Hunter's arm as a snake. And so that was some of it too. Which plays a role a little later on, but I digress. The blood flow from mother reverses back into Otho, but it doesn't just like reverse. It turns him into like Bane from Batman.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah.
He becomes super strength. And I don't know why, but I just like the idea of it. And he tosses mother to the side and he's just going to leave. And, then Tempest, you know, they meet and, it's not good and she's freaking out a little bit, but then she takes the android's head cause Otho had,
well, cause he kind of attacks her and is like going to drag her away. And you're like, is he going to rape her again? Like, take her like,
it's
and
bad.
Then
he's
it's
a
Holly.
Bad, bad guy. Like he's a bad guy.
Yeah. He's awful. Awful. And then Holly's there and she distracts and helps Tempest too.
Yeah. Yeah. So what happens to this character is a good thing, but I think this character has had so much potential. Like, I think he was a great bad guy. So he's so terrible, but like,
yeah.
Right. He speaks in a really deep voice and he speaks very confidently in everything.
Yeah.
Very confident that Saul gave him the direction. And he's very intimidating. He's very large. And he's got this thing on his head so you don't know what he looks like.
Yeah.
And, man, he's just a really good bad guy. But, and he even destroyed all but the head of the android. Fail safe. So this android, if he gets too far away or the android gets destroyed, the device on his head is supposed to crush his head. Well, he destroys all but the head of the android, so it doesn't crush his... Like, how did that happen? Like, what did he do where he was able to overpower an android, rip its freaking head off? Like, so he's an intimidating, big, scary, deep-voiced, deeply convicted bad guy. So I think there was a lot of potential with that, so I hope we see some sort of villain like that in future seasons, because Manny is a good one. But it's also really nice to see Tempest, who's kind of turning into a real badass. She's facing her fear, and she's like, just like nothing scares her. I mean, she was scared there, but she still, then she took the android's head and threw it away. And then, man, did that dude's head get crushed. That was a very visceral scene when that, and I liked that was a cool visual, right? It's this giant sci-fi futuristic method of keeping this guy in check. But man, did it look like, you know, Crusades, medieval torture death. And so I thought the visual was cool, being this futuristic device that looked very medieval in its effectiveness.
Yeah, a ton of medieval threads throughout this, hands down. And I agree. The scene was just like, I don't know. It was exciting to see Tempest get her revenge, her vindication. And because I think it was interesting earlier on, you know, in the show, she's very angry and full of rage, and understandably so, and rightfully so, but she's kind of gearing it towards the baby, and mother keeps kind of steering her away from that, being like, listen, it's not this baby's fault. Like, what happened to you is awful, but it's not this baby. And now she got to actually face and confront her fears, her rage, this awful man, this awful thing that happened to her, and like get revenge on it. And like, I'm a pretty peaceful person, but like now this podcast, and when we did Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I'm like, yes, like I am all about this. I'm all about this violence. I'm all about this revenge. And I am not sorry about it.
just a can of corn to the face, you know, that's the,
Oh, blowtorch. Don't forget the blowtorch.
Man, the last 5 minutes of that movie were crazy.
It was. So I was very okay with what happened to Super Otho, even though he would have been an interesting character in this whole thing, but it was a good scene. And it created some bonding between Holly and Tempest, because they've had friction, because Holly's another one where she kind of falls right into the like religion, and she kind of goes like, she's a little bit of a fair weather fan. It's like whoever's winning. And she really stood up for her. So that was awesome. Cause you know, when you're on a planet that needs to be survived, you gotta be friends and allies with your siblings. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Life's a team sport.
Yeah.
Especially in where they are, in the middle of
nowhere,
in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
But after that, right, Otho did hurt mother. Cause one, he was taking all the blood and stuff back that she was getting for the baby. But so she was weak and hurt. And then that's when father and hunter land. And then we have the mother and father reunion, you know, where father was reprogrammed for several episodes. So now they're mother and father again. And that was a nice feeling. It was nice.
And
he came and saved her, picked her up, which I think the show plays with gender dynamics a lot. You know, at the beginning it was, she's just this all powerful being. He is not, but he's just solid, right? He's just always trustworthy, always there, and shows up right on time. And that was a really, nice moment to have those two back together.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you mentioned it in your summary, right? Sue and Mother also kind of have their own moments because Sue yeah. is trying to help her with the baby, even though she's confused by it. She's like, I'm a doctor, not a mechanic. You know, that was an exact line right. she is. Damn it, Jim, I'm very a doctor. Star
Wars. Right. I thought of that too.
But they had this interesting bond over their unnatural motherhoods they're both in.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah, Sue's with Paul's, even though she's not Paul's biological. Mother's with the children, and now Mother's with the one she's pregnant with, which is also very unnatural. And it was an interesting and nice bonding time that they had. And that's another thing I think this show has really been great. They give characters moments and they're able to do
yeah.
it. And like really quickly, just like really quickly get these characters to be able to have these extremely touching bonding moments. And the thing is, I feel like there's so few anything, humans, androids, there's so few of them that I think that's what it would be like. I think you would build these quick connections with people because you know, like, this is it. There's not, we don't have options. You know, there's not 7.5 billion people like we have on Earth. You know, there's like 25 people.
Right.
So I think
that's
the show
true.
Does a really great job with that.
Well, and right, like, they don't have to, like, you get to have these conversations about very, I don't want to say rudimentary or simple, but like important issues, but like, right. Like all you kind of have on this planet is the serious stuff right now. Like there isn't any fluff. Like you're not like, oh, can't make bonds or talk about this stuff because I got to run my kid off to soccer practice.
Did you say
and
you
then
can't make bond? Like you're in jail and you can't pay your bond.
Is that what I said? It could be. It could be. Blame on the two on the EMF coming off both refrigerators in my house. Okay, that's what that is.
Aaron lives a crazy life in Chicago that I don't know anything about.
That's true. That's very true. I don't have time to create these relationship or these bonds because I got to run off to soccer practice and I got to run my kid off here and I got to do this and like a lot of like. Of this stuff, you know, that exactly like keeps us busy. That's not necessity. It's like you're either surviving or there's white space in this show. And so you do have that to like fill it with, like, it's kind of like, well, what did we do before we had 17 streaming platforms and, you know, like all of these other activities and all of this outside stimulation. It's like, oh, you just talk to people.
About
serious things. Weird. But it is. I think one of the things this show does really well is it takes complex situations, but it uses with the human and the android or like the mechanical, like logical communication and like really kind of, I don't want to say it simplifies the issues, but the way it breaks it down, it packs a lot of punch as far as meaning and profoundness in these small moments that I feel like you don't usually get from other shows.
Yeah. And then they throw in the fantastical.
Yeah.
As well, which creates another interesting dynamic. And then kind of with where the kids and Mother and Father and Sue, they're kind of off in the middle of nowhere in this cave.
Mm-hmm.
And those tarot cards that gave a mother a vision, Paul is throwing those cards away and burning them. But
yeah.
Before Otho died, he said, Saul whispers in your ear now, which is also interesting because there's voices and we're gathering that now Paul is the one hearing the voices. And before that it was Marcus. And before that it was Otho. And
right. And they all are hearing them for a period of time and then it goes away.
Yeah, which is now it's, is this the fantastical or is this something else? Is this whatever it is seems petty?
Does seem kind of petty.
You're not doing a good enough job. You're going crazy. I'm going to the kid. You know, so
yeah.
And so that's where they are. And then with the Mithraic, they've been left at the fifth element rock, as we've been calling it, when Father and Hunter escaped. Now they're just kind of hoofing it back to get to anywhere. And Lucius calls out Marcus. He realizes that when Mother said Marcus isn't Marcus, Marcus is pretending to be Marcus. And you mentioned last episode, maybe that was the thing you mentioned that you called. You know, was Lucius recognizing it? Was he not, that Marcus was telling lies? And finally, Marcus's level of crazy has told Lucius, like, this guy's go off the deep end. So then they don't fight. Lucius, who was kind of Marcus's right-hand man for a while, beats crap out of him, blindsides him. And then I got to ask you, he shoves something in his mouth. Was that Mother's eyes?
Yes, he shoved an eye in his mouth. And I don't know why. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he thought, like, because it was a necromancer eye, he was going to explode or something would happen. I don't know.
Yeah, so because Marcus was wearing him around his neck. So right. Lucius takes one out. I thought that's what it was. So he shoves that eye in his mouth. Yeah. He starts foaming at the mouth.
Yes.
In and out of consciousness. He's starting to get real veiny in the face. He's starting to look a little.
I know, like scars or veins. Yeah, he might be turning into vein or bane. We don't know. I wonder, like, is he, and now, you know, he's having the hallucinations of Hunter with the snake arm. Like, it's like, is he slowly being poisoned from this eyeball?
Yeah. And it's hard to tell because he's been hallucinating things.
Right. Yeah. No,
hearing things. Right. And so that's kind of where we're left. They leave Marcus for dead. And the Mithraic kind of hike their way back. The kid's mother, father, and Sue are just kind of in the cave. And then it's kind of where we're left at the end of episode 9.
Yes.
And we have episode 10, which
things
is
just get
bananas.
It gets real bananas.
We're going to have to watch ourselves because we don't do a whole lot of editing, but we don't mind a little cursing, but there's going to be this overwhelming urge to say the F word a lot. About this episode?
A lot. So I basically had 3 notes for the last 2 episodes because Jay and I have been watching them, you know, 2 at a time and then doing them. And for episode 9, I texted Jay and the only thing I said was father exclamation point in all caps and then ghosts question mark exclamation point. For this episode, I believe it was just all in caps. What the beep?
Yep.
That's all I had. And so this episode, episode 10, is called The Beginning. Now, what's interesting about this is it's directed by Luke Scott.
Oh,
so they go back to Ridley Scott's son for this one.
Before you give the breakdown, I even think the name of this episode is interesting. The last episode of the season is called The Beginning.
Yeah.
Which makes me feel like future seasons are going to be totally different. Like, I feel like this, like, obviously it's like the prequel, but like the way we think cinematically of prequels. I feel like the next season and beyond, and we can talk about this at the end, but I feel like that's where the show's really going to take off in storylines and evolution. And we're going to see what the ghosts are, what those bones are, what there's something you said last time that I think also might be on the right track as well. So I think even the name for me, even when I just looked up the name to put it on the script, it was like The Beginning. That's a weird final episode name. Then after watching, I'm like, oh, this isn't the story. This is the exposition for the real story for the show.
Yeah, you think so?
I might be totally wrong, but I do think so. I do think so.
Okay.
So I interrupted you, and you're going to give us the breakdown.
No, you're fine. Oh, Deep Thoughts by Jay Hoffman.
Well,
I'm here for it. And Jack Handy. Yep. So mother, father, Sue, and the children search for a more inhabitable place for mother's baby. She is gestating pretty quickly. I would say within days, she is coming, you know, she's now looking almost like a full term pregnancy. Paul continues to hear the voice, like the one that drove Marcus insane. Marcus is still wandering around, seeing things and getting veiny. I don't know if he's cutting his face. I don't know if it's veins. I don't know what it is, but yes, he's looking gnarly. It reveals to him, the voice reveals to him, that Marcus and Sue are imposters, that they're not his real parents. And there comes a scene later on in the episode where basically, like, Paul's trying to leave and he's hearing. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I was just so in awe of this episode that I didn't even remember. But, like, we're not hearing everything that Paul is hearing. Is that correct?
Not like we were with Marcus.
Okay, like, that's what I thought.
Marcus's was, like, in his ear, demonic yeah. whispers. This one, like, Paul, like, thinks he hears stuff and then goes to explore mysterious voices and, like, somebody's calling him somewhere.
Right.
So yeah, we're definitely not getting the same type of voices as we did with Marcus.
Okay, that's what I thought, because sometimes Paul is saying things and I was like, wait a minute, we didn't hear that. Did we hear that? So, like, he's just relaying what he's hearing. So we're actually in the dark a little bit about the information that Paul is maybe being fed by this voice. Now, I think it's also important to note that during episode 9 and now 10, we are starting to have visions. Mother is seeing them, like when she picked up the tarot card, where she's seeing these almost like druid-like figures. Like, I don't know if she's going into another world or she's having a vision, but they've all got hoods on, kind of like the ghost of Tally. And like, they're all sitting around and they're kind of worshiping some being or something in like a smaller fifth element rock that seems to have a head sticking out,
yes.
which also kind of reminds me of the beings in the beginning of the fifth element, like when they were locking stuff up. A lot of fifth element for me in this episode, in this show. So, Paul's hearing things. They're still trying to find a place for this baby. Paul's kind of taking it upon himself, like he needs to find a safe place for the baby. Now they're saying there's no tropical zone, or the voice is telling Paul there's no tropical zone on this island. And that's interesting, because there's the moment where they're talking about the tropical zone, and I thought it was with mother and father, and they make some sort of face, like they were like, like you would as a parent, like when you know you're lying to your kid. And being like, yeah, tropical zone. Like, that's right. But I remember having a feeling where I was like, oh, there's not a tropical zone, or there's something going on with this tropical zone. Like, what's up with that? There's something there. So there's apparently not a tropical zone. Now Paul is saying the voice didn't know. So Paul ends up in an altercation with Sue, and he shoots her. Not fatally, but shoots her nonetheless. Sue's the doctor, so someone's got to take care of Sue. Or Sue's going to have to doctor herself. While this is going on, mother's like, she's getting ready to give birth, but her and father, and I'm sorry, this happens before, but her and father have a whole discussion on how mother got pregnant. And it's a really, really interesting scene. We'll get into it, but basically it's basically like, Android affair, extramarital affair, discussion and then like divorce. It's very fascinating. I actually enjoyed it quite a lot. Then mother gives birth to her baby while also having visions of these druid ghosts. The baby comes out. It is not human. It is not android. It is a flying leech-like snake.
Mm-hmm.
And I could really end it there. Because I don't know how to feel about it. It ends up needing to like feed on her, so it's kind of like feeding off of her. It's definitely got like a graboid, like a face hugger kind of feel to it. Very, very aliens, very Ridley Scott. And so mother's kind of feeding it so that it doesn't attack anything else. And father and her discover while this is all going on, mother's trying to like get away and keep this away from the children. They discover the one of the druid like creatures who attacks mother, you know, they end up killing this creature and they discover that it's some form of devolved human. So they come to the conclusion that there have been humans on Kepler-22b and they are devolving. They're not evolving. They're actually going backwards.
Yeah. I have a question on that. Yes. Was it that they were human or they thought they were human, but they're just humanoid, but that the creature was devolving?
That is a good question. Based on the conversation that mother and father had after they discovered this particular creature, I think they came and then did he take a bite? No, of the skull. Cause that creature had a skull. And so I think they came to the analysis and conclusion that the humanoid creatures that were on the planet that kind of just showed up were the like end stages of the evolution of the humans.
Okay.
Because they go on and they say, like, let's not tell the kids that they were eating this. Like, what we found, that information would be too distressing to them in light of recent.
Yeah. And that was something we said when we first saw them, was that we thought maybe they
were sort of
human thing.
You know, it's funny. And when we talked about it, that was episodes ago, exactly what I thought. I was like, somehow these are going to be some like either radioactive or like devolved humans. And then they were like, here they are, devolved humans. I'm like, oh, I'm so intuitive. So now they got, you know, all while this is going on, mother's like, I got to get rid of this baby. And then father's like, let's take the lander and we will go together. And there is this really sweet, touching moment where father was like, I would like to go with you. And she's kind of like, it's going to destroy you. Like, I got to destroy myself. I got to destroy this quote unquote baby, snake baby. I got to destroy this snake baby. And father's like, let me come with you. It would make me happy. And it was really sweet. He's just the best. And, so they're like, they take the lander and they go into one of the holes of the planet to like fly into the core. Cause those holes, I think, give off heat. So they're assuming that the core is hot magma. While this is going on, deranged Marcus is still walking around deranged. And then he ends up killing a scouting team of atheists.
Hey-o.
There's an atheist. Hey, the atheists are here. They've apparently got a ship and they've stoked out this planet too. So that's happening. Now we got the atheists. The rest of the atheists have arrived, which is going to be a bummer because most of the Mithraic are dead. Like, so it's just, I mean, they're going to take over. It could be a good or a bad thing. You know what I mean? And then mother and father end up flying through the planet to the other side they don't end up dying, do they get ejected from the lander?
They jump from it.
They jump from it. Okay. Also, super, well, we'll get into it. They jump from it, and then at the end, the lander crashes. Snake baby grows very large. So large that I'm gonna assign a gender to him.
He's very phallic like.
He's very phallic like. He grows so big that he breaks the lander, and then he floats off through the trees in the woods in a very Avengers-like way. And then the episode ends and the credits roll.
What'd you think?
Where do we go from here?
I have some thoughts.
Thoughts, Jay.
But, yeah. So Marcus is struggling.
Oh, man. Struggle bussing.
Pretty good. So it's just a lot of him wandering, trying to find anything and anybody. Just looking crazy and like his head's going to explode, yeah. Veins popping. He's got a look about him. Mm-hmm. But he's doing all that. But with the kids together, I think there's some really great dialogue between the kids just sitting, mm-hmm. having their discussion about mother's pregnancy. And I think like,
okay.
To me, it was the discussion of what this show is or one of the major themes of this show, and that's science versus the divine. You know, Holly arguing that it was and Hunter arguing it was a divine pregnancy, and then you had Tempest saying, "No, it's just science. It's science could explain this pregnancy." It also that makes me flashback to when. Campion lit the shrine on fire. Clearly explainable, but from the angle Marcus saw it at the time he saw it when he's asking for a sign, it appears divine. So I think it's interesting how it's just a discussion the kids are having, but getting their different perspectives on it, I think was really a really cool, nice discussion. And I like that it wasn't the adults, because right now the adults are just like yelling what they believe at each other. You know, they're just
gosh, totally. Well, go on.
I just think it's cool how they use the kids as the vessel to, because kids are still figuring it out. Whereas adults, a lot of times are like, this is my thought on this.
I mean, this is the truth and it is the only truth.
Yeah, there's no bending. Whereas with kids, it's there's a lot of questions and a lot of pliability. So I think it's more impactful to see the discussions at those with the kids on those themes.
When I was explaining this show to my husband, I was saying one of the things I enjoy a lot about it is the showing of the parallels between like. I was explaining to him, I'm like, you've got the Mithraic and you've got the atheist. And I'm like, there's really no moderation. Like you basically have two extremes and the kids are the fluidity in between. They're kind of that gray area of the, exactly what you're saying, like the questioning and the going back and forth. And it's funny because the Mithraic, the, you know, extreme or the fundamental, you know, religious folks and the atheists who are like, no, there's no room for any sort of spirituality or any sort of fantastical or mystical, just logic or whatever. Like they're kind of two sides of the same coin in the sense that they're both very unwavering in their way is the only way. And yeah, you've got the kids who are able to, and that's a great point. I didn't think about that, is that the kids are really the lens in which you see how people can find the gray.
Yeah. So when you explained that to your husband, was he like, why would I want to watch a show about real life? Because you just explained the current political culture of the world.
I know.
It's the people that are the loudest keep getting all the attention.
Oh my gosh, exactly, exactly. But I'm like, but there's snake babies in it. There aren't snake babies. It's 2020 though. We got two more months. There could be snake babies.
I think you meant to say there's not snake babies yet.
Yes, exactly. It's 2020. Anything's possible.
It's the worst day of your life so far.
Right. So, yeah, I don't, this episode just really, once.
There's still
once
some
a
other
snake
things.
Baby happy. There's other things. Go on. Take
Let's
me.
Get to the other things before we get to the crazy.
Okay.
There's some fun things in there. We mentioned Paul hearing the voices, you know,
yes.
And he followed them and he discovers these hieroglyphs in this cave. And he starts to see a story play out and in that there's some more of the visions and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really neat scene, right? Because we just keep seeing these different characters go through this, this vision, and right, it's weird because it feels fantastical, but the fact that it's switching from person to person makes it seem like it might be like a thing, a living thing hopping in these people, or I don't know.
Yeah, like, there's some sort of force manipulating, and it's only happening to the men.
You guys can't see the face she made. She's just like, it's only happening to the men. And then she made this sassy face and put chapstick on.
That is accurate. That is exactly what I
so
said.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Pig.
Mm-hmm.
We're all pigs here. That's men.
No, I never think that. I am so not that person. But I do think it's interesting that it is only happening. It's only happening to the men. And so I'm very curious. One of the things I'm most curious about is definitely this voice and where it's coming from and what its intentions are.
Yeah, absolutely.
More chapstick now.
There's another really great moment between Father and Campion.
Yes.
Where Father tells him, you know, I thought your empathy would make you weak and less of a survivor.
Yes.
And the opposite was true. You're a leader and you understand people and you're a survivor. And I'm really proud of you for that. And I think that goes into, masculinity, like toxic masculinity stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, no, it's okay to be a man and have feelings and care for things. And
yeah.
And it's really interesting that he's an android, right?
Right.
So is that the programming? We know he's kind of evolving past it. Was it being in those roles as mother and father? I don't know. I think this show has just so many different themes it addresses, but that was a really cool moment.
Yeah.
There's another one where Campion says the same thing. He said, you're a survivor too. And I'm, you know, but don't you ever, you know, stop dying and disappearing and stay put. And we'll get to that too. That was a super nice, tender moment that they had. And they'd been struggling. They'd been having some issues for a minute. So that was nice. Then we get the part with mother and father where they get their fight. And
it was great.
He's trying to figure out how she got pregnant. And she explains she's going to this, we call it the matrix here.
Right.
The Mithraic matrix. You know, she plugs in and it recoups some memories that she has. And then she uses this extremely technical jargon to explain sex. And I thought it was absolutely hilarious.
I loved it.
She was just like very matter of fact while in the matrix, you know, well, in the matrix, I met our creator. He tapped into memories that I have that you don't have of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you know, it's just, it was so technical. I was laughing the whole time. She was like,
yeah,
she was like, and then,
yeah,
then he's getting mad.
Like, and then he entered my program, like, and he, like, all of this stuff, it was very, and he was like,
and she's like,
was definitely,
why are you upset,
jealous,
father? All he did.
Why are you upset, father? I haven't even gotten to the upsetting part yet.
All he did was put himself in my program. Why are you possibly upset? It was a very funny scene, but it also was like and even just how they fought, I thought was interesting. They're
yes,
trying to figure out the emotions, trying to figure out the programming. But you know, father, and then mother tells him too, the primary mission is different. The primary mission was not the kids they had. They were training.
I know.
This baby is. And that really also tears father, because he cares about Campion, but also all the new children very much. And yeah. I don't think he's on board with this baby. This is the one. I don't think he's on board with that. So
I would agree. And again, this just had so many real life implications and layers to it of conversations. That's what I love about, I do really enjoy this about this show, where it's like, they've got these very, like, if you stripped away the emotions, I guess, that become your identity in these situations, like there's these really logical conversations that happen, and like you see these issues. So like, you know, you've got like, she basically went outside of the partnership, right? The marriage, whatever you want to call it. And now she's pregnant, but she's also kind of like, okay, done with these kids. These were the mission. Now I've got my own child. And he's like, he's not on board for that at all. In the sense of like, not that he wouldn't be on board for another child, but he's not on board for her deciding that that's the way it needs to go. And that's their mission. Like for her deciding for him.
Yes. Yeah. He didn't. And he said that we've evolved past the primary mission, no matter what that mission is. We've evolved past it. Mm. So we don't need to concern ourselves with it. So I thought that was, and interesting how he had understood how he's gaining these emotions and these feelings that they were never intended to have. But this episode too, there's more before we get to Snake Baby. There's just a lot of snake hallucinations and flashbacks and stuff in the last two episodes. Very snake heavy.
You think it's to be a snake god?
I was thinking more Adam and Eve reference.
Oh, okay. Yeah, a lot of heavy, clearly very heavy, religious. It's as if, why am I blanking on his name? Mad Max. Why am I blanking on his name?
Mel Gibson.
It's as if Mel Gibson created the series and the show.
Maybe
he does love his religious.
That's true, but this one's a lot less abusive towards the Jewish population in this movie.
Agreed.
So father and mother have this fight, and he can't deal with it anymore. He can't deal with her. He doesn't think he actually cares about her. Him. He believes he cares about the kids and her, and she thinks her sole focus is this new baby, and he can't deal with it. And he tells her that. And then he goes, and I love this part too. He literally is drawing on the ground with a stick. He's trying to take his emotions and turn them into a math problem.
Yes.
Such a robot thing to do to try and like solve this emotional quandary that he's having. And I'll be honest, what he decided he wanted to do was not, I literally thought he was like, I have to kill mother. That's what I thought he was going to say.
Oh,
like that's what I thought the math turned out to be. She's dangerous.
Yeah.
But no, it was to have his memories wiped. So I don't know what that says about me as a person, that that's where I thought this was going to go. But
there is no other option. I must eliminate you.
I must kill that person. Yeah, no. No, he decides I should wipe my memories, start with a clean slate so I don't have to deal with these emotions. He doesn't. You know, he's learning the hard way, right? Once again, getting into that masculinity thing, you know, that emotions, how do we?
Right. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah. Ooh, there's another one we can throw in there. Yeah, very, very much so. Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to do one more thing and then get to Snake Baby and the whole crazy end. But just Paul, you know, you mentioned in your summary, addresses Sue that you're not my mom.
Yeah.
And so he's hearing the voice. And I guess I just wrote, is it a deity? What is this thing? What is it? We still don't know any answers by the end, but.
Right.
Yes.
It's giving people crazy directions.
Yes.
Like it told the rapist to rape people.
And part of it too, with Marcus being told to save mother instead of killing her, you know, you wonder if it's something to do with this snake baby. What the hell? Snake
baby. Right. Snake baby.
Oh, God. What the hell? I got some ideas, but it's still weird. Yeah. Let's talk about the snake baby. What?
Or we're just going to get into it.
What'd you think about the snake baby?
Okay, deep breath. I don't know. I don't really know what to think about this. And I got things to say about everything. And this is one of those where I'm like, I don't know about it. Like, I don't get it. I have seen a couple YouTube videos that are like ending explained that I think maybe I need to watch. To like get some insight into it, but I guess I was really hoping for like but I'm sure everybody was like an android human. I was hoping for, you know, like Blade Runner, like we got an android human baby and this is how the race is going to go on. Like, you know, and I don't know, but instead we got this leech mouth flying snake. That I don't know what I don't know what purpose it serves. Although Mother makes some sort of statement then where she's like, oh, this wasn't the program or our program. It was an imposter program or something that created this. So that leads me maybe to believe that, I guess, like this voice is somehow intertwined with what happened. I don't know in what way, but the way it all took place was just real bizarre. It was real bizarre. What about you?
I'm okay with it just because I'm hoping it gets explained. I think I call this one that I didn't think we were going to get a lot of explanations at the end of the season.
And you did say that.
I think they're going to save it. And hopefully, you know, by the first half of the next season, we've got some answers, I'm hoping. I have a couple ideas. I thought maybe, you know, she said, I'm a creator of death. I wonder if this was some way that she separated from the necromancer self, right?
Oh, like,
that was some weird birthing process where she got rid of the necromancer version of her.
Do you think it's a necro snake?
Maybe. Like, but she's That's getting rid terrifying. Of that destruction, that death, that part of her, giving that part of her away to be more for the world. She's giving it away. And so she can be more motherly.
Yeah.
Now, did she do it willingly? Was it something that happened? Was that on this planet, some sort of creation of evil? I don't know. You know, I don't know. I feel there's some very, very heavy rich parables going on, some Greek mythology going on. And it, and I kind of like that. I kind of like the sci-fi setting and telling those stories in a sci-fi setting, but it's confusing tonally because of how very ingrained in the science fiction this show started off. But I think
it's
but I think it goes with the questions, you know. Sorry,
I demand. No, you're fine. I demand answers about Snake Baby, flying Snake Baby. I really do. Like, I need an explanation because if I don't get one, I might turn into Marcus.
Yeah, season two of Flashbacks Presents might get cut abruptly.
I think because now you're good at this. I think because, you know, you can have a better ability to stay with the trees and see the forest. I can sometimes get a little lost in the leaves. And I think I maybe are missing some of those like parable things and the things that you're seeing because I'm got so focused on the fucking snake that I'm like, I don't know what else to concentrate on. There's a flying leech snake. I'm having trouble wrapping my head around it.
I had a face lag. I didn't have, I was like, what? But I like sat with it. I let it stew a little bit. And
okay. That's why because, I think I might need the YouTube videos and your insight.
Some other things, right? When they flew into in Kepler's core, the planet's core, to try and, you know, burn up them and this new demonic flying snake thing. And then they came out. You know, you kind of said they came out the other side. And I wonder, you mentioned something about some weird time travel-y stuff. And I was like, that's so stupid. And I'm like, oh, she's so right. I kind of thought that whole them coming out was,
wait a minute,
some time travel-y bit. I feel like some of the creatures and the bones and the humans are the ones that are there now.
OMG. What if those bones with those big creatures were snake babies? Okay, I'm down. I'm in. I'm in for season two now, Jay. I'm here. I'm ready for it.
And those like creature things they were eating and worried about are actually just them.
Yeah. Okay, guys, we solved season two. Too smart for our own good. We already know what's going to happen now. There's no surprises.
Now we're going to watch it. It's like not going to be that at all.
Which is fun. That'll be even better. There better not be like a flying triceratops or something real weird. Something even weirder. But that's a great point. Oh my God. Then they're eating themselves.
But now that's also time travel-y weird. And then
paradoxes create the paradox.
Yeah. So is that what some of the ghosts are? You mentioned some of that stuff by referencing.
Oh my God. Like old Mithraic.
Yeah. So that's that.
I like it. All right. Now I'm back.
So yeah, I didn't think they went through the planet. I thought they went through time.
Okay. That's cool. I'm all about time travel. I'm a huge Doctor Who fan.
But that also goes to what the hell science fiction is that? All they did was go through this hot magma thing that should have killed them and destroyed them.
There's got to be a podcast or a YouTube video that talks about it somewhere. Also,
here, I have to this podcast.
Right. We're doing it. There I want to take a moment to spend some time on the moment that mother and father have before they go to their demise, where they have their memories flashing of the children and their moments flashing through their head, like many people say, before they maybe have a near-death experience or that they are in fear for their lives. I actually hear that from people who have been put in situations where they are potentially going to die, that all of the memories of their family and things flash through their head. So that was quite powerful. I found myself in some definite tears, despite the snake suckling on mother's android teat. But it was a moving, very moving moment.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
And then the ending, you mentioned the atheist army showing up.
Yes.
Which, by the way, Marcus, like, there's like five or six of them and kills them like very easily. Like, he's a super soldier.
He really is. And man, that guy is just so messed up.
Yeah, because he's full on into the Mithraic Kool-Aid now. He's all in, because he even tells their people, I'm going to take care of you.
I'm the king. Yeah, this is my kingdom. Also, I do think there's a little bit of a commentary on like the soldier, like child soldier thing, and like what it does to your head. And like, he's just like, he's a ruthless, like clearly he's got issues. Like, he's feeling abandoned by his family, like all on his own. And like, he's really on a bender, on a death bender.
Yeah. He's gone nuts.
There's some like PTSD, I think, like commentary there.
There is. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then one other interesting thing, all the children and everybody that are left with Sue is severely injured. Mm-hmm. So she's kind of minimized, but they all look at Campion, you know.
Yeah.
What are we doing, bro? Like, he's the new leader of that little section of people. And I
even Hunter. And Hunter was very much like, I'm the highest ranking Mithraic here. And now, right, everyone's like, yeah, it's all gone to the wayside. And they're like, it's Campion.
And this was something we said earlier, too. Paul's super smart, but he's not a survivor, right? Like,
yeah,
if you're the smartest guy in the room, you know, if you've never been in this room before and you don't know the hazards, and you don't have the life long standard of having to survive, like, you're not going to be the leader. So I thought that can take us in an interesting realm. So I have a lot more questions than answers after the season finale, but let's talk about the season as a whole. What do you think? What do you think?
I really enjoyed it. Now, what's funny is before we talked about this and you added in your time travel and kind of putting some of those other pieces together, I was like, you know, I wasn't, so how do I put it? This is how I put it to my husband. I'm like, listen, I'm like, I loved everything up till episode 9, and then episode 10 left me kind of strange with the snake, and then on top of it, it's not only a snake baby, guys, it morphs into, in Jay's words, a super flying snake killing machine. I mean, which is what happens. And I was like, I don't know about this. So the way I explained it to my husband was like, if after this discussion right here, right now, I would have said, if it was between season two, if both of them were on at the same time, season two of Watchmen and season two of Raised by Wolves, I would have chosen Watchmen. And I probably would have been like, meh, if I had to choose one. Now, after the conversation we're having and the things that you've brought up, I am on board for season two to see where this goes and how this plays out and how the questions are answered.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I really like this show. I stick with my commentary earlier. We're both Westworld fans. I think I'm digging this more, but I think too, like you are very much more into the science part of science fiction than I am.
Yeah.
The Godfather flashback, Scott, is also very much that way. You know, that's why we have a different take on Back to the Future. You know, both love it. He wants to see the science behind time travel. And I say, who cares? It's about the relationships. So I'm not as into this. I like the science part of the science fiction, but I'm actually, like, don't get me wrong. This episode was super weird, much more weird than I expected. But I'm really liking this mixture of really interesting science. I don't want to say accurate science, but there's some effort put into the science part of the science fiction.
Yeah, there is.
Just layering this fantasy element on top of it, I think, is interesting. And I think it's because you read those old, you know, stuff in the Old Testament, you read Greek mythology, you're like, what? No, this stuff doesn't happen. Like, this is what it would look like, though. It would look absolutely nuts. It would look totally bonkers, you know, like a hydra where you cut its head off and a new one grows. That would be crazy, you know. Somebody's talking to a burning bush and we're supposed to buy that they're not a nut job. Like, this is what it would look like.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And now I've had this like insight into like, oh my gosh, if they're starting on a planet and these things are happening, does this become the biblical stories of this new civilization on Kepler-22b?
Which is what I feel like why it's called the beginning. The last episode is called the
beginning. That is so cool. Jay, you've blown my mind.
I think things sometimes.
Jay thinks things good.
But, and I say religious parable, it's the further into the show we get, though, the more like Greek mythology it all feels to me.
Yeah.
Much more so than like, just because the religious overtones and the debate between science versus religions, heavy, but it feels much more like I said, a mythology than the more modern sense of religion, which I prefer. I think the mythology concepts more interesting. When Mother was the necromancer, she looked very like a Greek mythological statue
of Medusa-ish. Exactly. Yeah. Don't look in my eyes. Don't look at me. Great point.
So I'm liking this mixture. The flying snake is still just so weird, and it's definitely going to be. Like, if they can't, they're going to have to explain it. Because this is going to be something that's talked about, right, with this
show. It can't go away. Like, there's no way.
It's the flying snake in the room, you know? You just can't get around.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I got a lot of questions. I got so many questions. What in the hell is Marcus becoming? What's he's turning into something.
Yeah, great point. Yeah, I know. And how, I mean, man, he's really made an evolution. Who do you think in this season's made the biggest evolution?
Positive or negative, either way.
Either, yeah. Or father. If you've got a positive and a negative.
I think father. I hope, you know, you've mentioned the actor, and I have to have his name written down in front of me to say it right. Yeah. But Abubakar, something like that. I actually really hope he gets, you know, like an Emmy or something, because I think he's the MVP. I think his character, while being this like voice of calm, has also been the one to have the most emotional growth as a character. Marcus and Mother are just like on this weird verge of like Marcus has gone insane. Mother's been teetering on the verge of insanity. Sue's very set in her ways. I think she's had the least growth. I think it's father. I think he's, but it's hard to tell because it's subtle. And he thinks about the things right? He recognizes he's dealing with emotions, but he's acknowledging it, where his mother wanted to fight it for a while and she's more confused by it. He's just saying we're evolving, and he tries to lean into it. So I think father.
Okay.
Did you pull his name up?
I did, and now I'm tripping all over it because it is. It's like Abubakar Saleem, and I'm sure I'm butchering it as well. I was trying to look for the actual pronunciation of it, and they don't have it. Abubakar Saleem. He has not been in a lot. Literally, his filmography, he's got 3 credits. He's got Assassin's Creed Origins, Jamestown. Both of those came out in 2017. There's not a whole lot of them. He's a British actor and a video game developer. And so he's provided voice for video games in Assassin's Creed. He's acted in television on Jamestown. And now Raised by Wolves. And that's it. Jamestown was a British drama. Television drama. So I haven't seen it. So he hasn't been in a lot. But man, is he incredible.
Yeah.
And speaking of video games, I've said this to my husband, who's a gamer. But I'm like, this would be such an interesting video game. Like, this could be an entire world. Like, I'm going to mess some things up. So I'm not trying to piss off the gamer people. But, like, maps and, like, RPG, like, the role-playing games and, like, very much, I'm blanking on it. It's my husband's favorite game. He'd be offended. Mass Effect. Like, where you're picking a character and you're going and you're building this world, you know, and you're going through the maps and everything and, like, doing missions. Like, I feel like this show has a very video game relatability to it.
Yeah, I could see it because it's all about there's so much undiscovered on this planet so far.
And like, you know, being a Mithraic versus being an atheist versus being this character versus being an android. Like, there's a bunch of different ways you could actually go. And then maps and everything. All right, back to the characters. Sorry, that was a sidebar.
It's okay. I think other questions, you know, like what did happen to mother and father? Did they just go through the planet? Was it some sort of time portal thing? Was it? I don't know. We're gonna find out. We've seen a few other humanoid things on the planet. What's going on? What are all the ghosts?
Right.
So
short little Jawa like ghosts.
Yeah. Part of me, my disappointment with this first season is I wish they would have answered a few more of the questions.
Yeah. I agree.
It felt now the second season got the green light like 2 episodes in. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah. So it was pretty quick that they greenlit it and all that. But it's like, if they hadn't, like, this show's incomplete. It's not a complete show.
If it was a limited series, hands down, you'd be like, what the F was that? Exactly.
But so I'm looking forward to season 2 because there's just so much they can get into. What's Saul's voice? What are the ghosts? What the hell's the fifth element period? What's the robot snake baby?
Made the robot snake baby?
Yes. How did mother get pregnant? All these things. So there's so many questions that we still have. What's the dynamic now that we have an atheist army, full army, big ship, way more than the 10 remaining Mithraic. I don't even know how many there are, but there's not that many. Because they're doing dumb things and dying.
They're doing dumb things.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else on season 1 as a whole?
No, but I will say what you're saying, like, you wish there were more questions answered. Same thing, because I think, like, if someone someone who, you know, if you're not listening to our podcast or you don't have a J in your life and you don't have somebody who brings up the points that like, hey, this is my perspective and I think this is what's going on, the time travel thing, and I think this is where it's going to go. You might have someone who feels like I did at the end of episode 10 and go, meh, I can leave it. You know, now because of your insight and perspective, I'm like, ooh, okay, yeah, I do want to see what happens. But, and I think that's because they just left it a little too open. You know, criticisms... No, I think I think same with you. I'd like a little more questions and then just, you know, that intro's a snoozer. that's a hill I'm going to die on with this intro of like all the HBO intros. This one is the worst.
I'm sticking with, I think the graphics would be okay. I think the music is a weird choice.
The graphics are cool. You're right. Yes.
I think with the right music, it doesn't feel as epic as this show. Like, don't get me wrong. For being like this discovery, you know, a show about discovery of a new planet, of re-moving civilization to somewhere else, you know, like a very grand idea. Generally, this season has been pretty small scale. You know, we see some hints at some bigger things. We don't see any of the big battles that happened on Earth. We don't, you know, it's all these small groups and it's a lot more about the interpersonal dynamics. So I think the next season is going to be huge. And the whole thing is for a show that is really small scale that feels big, that song does not feel big. It just doesn't feel big.
Yeah, I agree.
I think they're trying to be like, oh, this is such a personal show, but it's like, well, this song is not. This song is terrible.
I love intros. And so, like, my husband and I get into arguments because he'll be mad that I won't let him skip the intro on things. I'm like, no. He's like, we're literally watching The Office. This show has been out since, like, 2007. I'm like, I don't care. I want to skip this intro all the time. However, what I'm going to say as well is I love the score of it, the show itself. It's got a really strong score. And I love the outro credit score. I think it's super powerful. I love it. I don't know. Maybe they didn't want to be too Game of Thrones-ish / Vikings-ish. Because it does kind of have, I think, a little bit of that feel.
Vikings has a fantastic intro.
Does it? Okay. So
song.
I don't know.
Great song.
Hmm.
Yeah, you look that up after this.
Okay, I am. That's all I got to say about this show, actually.
Okay. Well, let's look at film influences from these last couple episodes.
Mm-hmm.
What did you see? You said a few.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, when father's really discussing how he needs to... he's got to erase his memories of her in order to carry on. It's the only way he can. And then, I mean, hardcore Alien... I couldn't put my finger on the end as I was watching the snake baby, giant flying snake, murder snake. It's a band name. We can make a band now.
All right.
Murder snake.
Death metal.
Death metal. Yeah. Murder snake.
You're singing though. You're singing.
I'll do it. only if we make t-shirts. The way it was moving out through the woods, I'm like, gosh, I feel like I've seen this before and I can't put my finger on it. And it wasn't until I saw your film influences that I realized, I'm like, ah, yes, Avengers. It has the movement of like those things in the original Avengers. They're flying around attacking people. That's what it's like. Those are my big ones. Okay. What about you?
Well, I mentioned, you know, I kind of lobbed some together. Mad Max, Thunderdome, Goonies, Hook, all just because they have a scene where there's kids protecting an adult by standing in front of them, using their youth and innocence as a shield for an adult that they think is a protector. Yeah. I like that. Mad Max Fury Road is one that I thought when you were talking, just the turning Otho into a body bag for the baby.
Oh my God. Yes.
You know, straight from there, the way the ship flies, the way Father flies that ship and operates it with these kind of interactive computer lights, very Minority Report, Iron Man when he's in the suit, very much what that reminded me of.
Good point.
And then, you know, any movie where somebody gives birth and then the baby's a thing. So Rosemary's Baby is the one standing out in my brain right now. But like any movie where it comes out, this, you know, the Dawn of the Dead remake, Zombie Baby. I'm just thinking anything where they give birth and it's like not a happy
baby. What you thought. Yeah.
So those are mine. So, I mean, and I don't know what the influences are, but I got to be honest. I mean, I feel like a lot of the, I feel like the writer of this show, I say it in the intro, I think he wears his inspiration on his shoulder, man. Like it feels very, very much like that. So
I'd say I definitely felt a Prometheus vibe in these other episodes as well. And we know that obviously this was Luke Scott, like we said, Ridley Scott's son, who directed this one, very much the alien feel. Like there was a moment like when she was delivering the baby, I was like, is this thing busting out or do we get a chest burster? Yeah, exactly.
And then I was like, how's a human going to come out of a mouth? And I was like, it's not a humanoid thing.
So yeah, that's right.
Snake. That's a snake. What the hell?
Oh my gosh. Yes. We were all surprised.
Yeah. Season 2 of Flashbacks Presents Raised by Wolves will be called Flashbacks Presents Raised by Wolves, Adventures of Snake Baby. I'm pretty sure that's what the second season's been called.
Awesome.
If not, they should.
Yes.
All right. Anything else to add?
No, I think that sums up season 1 of Raised by Wolves.
All right. Well, you want to give some plugs for the upcoming future for us?
Plug in for Flashbacks in October. We've got a super duper crossover with Classics. We're doing The Shining. And we are also going to be doing The Craft. There's the new Craft that has come out, and then we're going to be doing flashing back to the original Craft, that 1996 masterpiece. And we're going to get into it. I'm going to get witchy with you guys. You know, I'm into the tarot cards and the Reiki, and we go bring some crystals out and shit.
Yeah, so essential oils as well.
You know it. Definitely.
All right.
Yep.
Oh, you're going to have some high school flashbacks with The Craft going on.
You might put on some dark lipstick and a jumper.
All right. Well, in addition to all those things coming up on Front Row Flashbacks, you can always find our main podcast feed, the Front Row Network, on Facebook, and subscribe to our feed on Spotify or whatever you use to access your podcast. You can also be found on the NPR Illinois website under the Community Voices tab. You can follow us on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z, and you can find our Patreon on the Front Row Network's Facebook page. So if you enjoyed this content, we got more like it and more available. If you want to join us as a full-time Patreon, we would absolutely love to have you. Thanks for joining us. Hopefully you listened from the beginning. And if you got more insight, share it with us. Please do. Other than that, we'll see you all in the front row.
Just like love will do.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio Illinois. For more from the Front Row Network, including our articles or our other dozens of shows, visit thefrontrownetwork.com or nprillinois.org/programs/frontrownetwork. You can also find us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, and on Twitter @FrontRowReviews with a Z.